The most hearty welcome from me, your host, Tashina Thompson, to the very first My Beauty Politics podcast. I'm going to talk to you about something that is very dear and near to me. Very near because it's on my head. It's hair. The hair of Black women, to be exact. But more specifically, the discrimination of our hair in its natural form, or our centuries-old hairstyles. Since the horrific 15th-century slave trade of many African tribes that has grossly affected all Black people around the world, nothing has come easy or free. Primarily women and children with Afro hair, such as textures like curly, kinky, and/or coily, are faced with heavy discrimination in places of work and schools. Many are sent home from work or school, losing valuable hours of money or education, reprimanded for even attempting to display their hair, and/or assaulted, like the curly-haired 7-year-old child, Journey Hoffmeyer, that had her hair chopped off close to her scalp by her elementary school librarian in March 2021.
Don't touch my hair.
This is an issue Black women and children face all over the world, including
we, the North,
Canada, and the United States. Allow me to give a very brief history lesson. Before the transatlantic slave trade in the 15th century, our kinks, coils, and curls were celebrated. Many styles like twists, locks, and braids were a symbol of a person's history, a way to identify them to their tribe, social status, and family background. Certain styles were for certain celebratory events. There was a great pride and joy for men and women. We went from being able to love and care for our hair to covering it up to escape ridicule and trying to emulate European styles. But this was not done because they thought their hair was better. No. This was a way to survive. In a way, go unnoticed. Less African, less attacks. After slavery was abolished in 1865, our Black people were soon able to make a living for themselves in North America. It was now time to get back to caring for our hair. But not only caring for our hair, but now styling it in a way that will be deemed acceptable to the white European gaze. This was not an easy journey, but they didn't punk out, be defeated. They got creative. They felt the importance. When you're up against trouble, meet it squarely, face to face. Lift your chin, set your shoulders, plant your feet, and take a brace. Edgar Albert Guest. This brought the first hot comb in 1872 by French hairstylist François Marcel Gratteau. You may know the new name for it that we use today, the electric straightening comb, but I'll be referring to it as the hot comb. The hot comb is a metal-shaped comb with a non-metal handle. Back in their time, they heated it on an external flame. You may see many salons have like a little machine where they just stick their hot comb in and it'll just heat up. I even recently bought one that you use a plug into an outlet and it'll heat up on its own. But back in my youth, in the early 2000s, mothers would heat up their hot combs on the stove. Yeah, hot. Ouch. And in 1909, 4 years after Madame C.J. Walker came up with a product to heal scalps and generate hair growth, because at the time there was like no hair product specified for Black hair, which caused alopecia and dandruff and other diseases, Garrett A. Morgan, an African-American man from Kentucky, created the first chemical relaxer, a hair treatment that permanently straightens Afro hair. At the time, yes, this was huge. It wasn't until many years later, after a few studies, that we realized how damaging this was to our hair and scalp. And not long after, our people needed a revolution! In came the Civil Rights Movement in the 1950s! And in this movement came the Natural Hair Movement in the late 1960s! After years of trying to assimilate, our Black heroes pioneered, and in doing so, created a newfound appreciation for our features and hair in the Black community. This was when the popular phrase, "Black is beautiful," was born.
Trust yourself. Think for yourself. Act for yourself. Speak for yourself. Be yourself. Imitation is suicide. Marva Collins.
Our Afro quickly became a powerful political symbol to us that reflected our pride in our African ancestry. And on the other hand, law officials, politicians, and the media deemed our fro hair as a militant, threatening symbol. Yeah, exactly what you heard is what it is. Our hair, loving our hair and ourselves, were deemed as a threat to mainstream America.
In a society that profits off your self-doubt, liking yourself is a rebellious act. Amy Pence Brown.
Black men and women have been fighting for years for the right to be and the space to live as they are. And from there, it has stayed an uphill battle. And when I say it has stayed an uphill battle, I mean it has stayed an uphill battle. As a Black Canadian woman who has lived in the US and is now back in Canada going to school and working, yeah, I can even attest to that. But we're not going to focus on me. I know. We're going to focus on our Canadian peers. May 2019, Toronto. Natasha Doyle Merrick, a young Black woman working at the Ego Bistro located inside the Art Gallery of Ontario Museum, was told on more than one occasion to not leave her curly, Afro-textured hair down. This was not a request or a requirement for non-Black employees. Ms. Doyle Merrick directly asked the same manager why she couldn't wear her hair down, and in return, she was asked why. So you can scare the clients away? Upon her therapist's advice, Ms. Doyle Merrick resigned the following month. Same day, an employee relations manager reached out to her and the investigation began. Seeming to be in her favor, they asked about ways the institution could remedy the situation. With high hopes to create a safer and more accepting work environment for Black employees, she gave her list of two. That includes human rights training for all staff, including senior management. But also, outside of the list, she asked that she remain a part of the conversation about how the initiatives she suggested would be implemented. And lastly, to be financially compensated for therapy and loss of income that stemmed from the discrimination she experienced. A year later, 2020, Doyle Merrick says she's been shut out of the process and has yet to receive the financial compensation the Art Gallery of Ontario agreed to provide her. It gives me sheer anguish to inform you, my dear listener, that natural hair discrimination is nothing new in Canada. So let's run it back a few years then. Montreal, 2014. Letitia McNichol was told to leave her job at Madison's New York Grill and Bar for wearing cornrows at the side of her head. The embarrassing moment, which left McNichol in tears, came from her boss, who had a fit in front of... So, pause. McNichol said to Global News that it was in front of everybody, but it did not specify if that meant including customers, but I'm going to at least assume everybody includes staff. After filing a discrimination complaint against Madison with the Quebec Human Rights Commission in 2015, they finally ruled in 2018 that this indeed was an act of racial and gender discrimination. As a result, the restaurant owner was ordered to pay McNichol $14,500 in damages. They have yet to do so, causing the case to move on to the Human Rights Tribunal. As long, as painful, and as tiring as this may be, McNichol told Global News, "A lot of people are depending on me to go through with this, to stand up and to keep going."
You may hear the wind whistling threats, thunderstorms too, taking things scary. Failing to think clearly, just know you are not alone. Blessings, Mitembo. Like nature, the sun will always shine bright after the storm. Just like our Canadian dancer, fashion icon, businesswoman, and activist Simone Wright, who decided to turn her natural hair workplace discrimination moment into something positive and created the Parting Roots Project in 2017. Now, this is my opinion.
That's my opinion!
This is a beautiful project. Parting the Roots is a photo project that shares significant photos of Black hair and styles. She shares the history, politics, significance, and the art behind Black hair and Black styles. Wright said in an interview with CanadianWomen.org that she is using this project to create a safe space to start the education process and to dispel ongoing myths about Black hair. She goes on to say that she is using her platform to validate and celebrate the beauty of Black hair. Unfortunately, at the moment, in Canada, there is no legal protection against racial hair discrimination. But there is one in place in our neighboring country of the United States that I'd like to share with you. The Crown Act, which stands for Creating a Respectful and Open World for Natural Hair. This is a law first signed in the state of California on July 3rd, 2019. That prohibits race-based hair discrimination, which is the denial of employment or educational opportunities because of one's hair texture or protective hairstyles, including braids, locks, twists, and bidou knots. Since then, there have been 12 states that have passed this law. The Crown Act movement was created by a team of Black women leaders. As I mentioned before, it has been and still is an uphill battle. But with women like Letitia McNichol refusing to give up on herself and her supporters, Simone Wright turning bad moments into something positive, artistic, and educational, and those African American female leaders behind the Crown Act, we may be able to see the top of that hill real soon. It was a pleasure to speak with you on the first episode of My Beauty Politics. From your friendly neighborhood host, I'm Tashina Thompson. Until next time.